everyone. For those who don't know me, my name is Max, M Wang at FB, and I'm a software engineer here in Boston, at least for a few more days. And I'd like to welcome you all to my badge post. So I know a badge post video is a little weird. I don't really recall any of them from the 7 years I've been at Facebook, or 9 years in intern years. But, well, here's the thing. I first joined the company back in 2011. And back then, anytime Facebook would make any major product changes or big directional decisions, pretty much everyone who wanted to would weigh in on it. If it affected users, folks had opinions. And this was stuff like Facebook chat, which at the time everyone was just like, oh, this is just bad Gmail. But also privacy changes, product redesigns, Google+. And since back then Facebook was only 1,000 people, it honestly felt like one big conversation that everyone was participating in. Now obviously that doesn't scale. We're at 50,000 people now, and that kind of dialogue just can't happen the way it used to. So I want to take one last chance before I go to try to say something a little bit louder. Try to push the conversation a little bit further out from where I normally work. And besides just being a little bit noisier, there's two other reasons why I wanted to make this a video. The first one's pretty straightforward. I've got a lot to say, and ain't no one got time to read that shit. But the other one I think is the most important by far. I really want to humanize the message I'm sharing. I want to wear my feelings and my thoughts on my sleeve. I don't want to just be text in a box. I don't want to be a little circle with my face with my badge photo in it. I want to be a flesh and blood person saying these things. And that's really important to me, because it's right at the heart of why I'm deciding to leave the company in the middle of a pandemic. Because I don't think Facebook is paying enough attention to the raw human needs of the people who use our platform. Now, obviously, a lot has happened recently in the world and in our response to the world. So I want to deep dive a bit more into two broader issues that I think are worth unpacking and which are particularly concerning to me. And before I get started, I do want to make one disclaimer. I do not assign any malice to our leadership. I do believe that Mark and the M team and the policy team are by no means trying to do wrong by our users. But that does not mean their actions aren't going to harm people. So I want to be kind, but I also want to be unrelenting. And I want to criticize openly, and I want to criticize loudly. And I think we have to keep doing those things even if we get an explanation. Because there have been plenty of bad decisions all throughout history, and all of the greatest justifications and processes and execution, none of it is enough to change the fact that these things cause people harm. I want to start by talking about Mark's Q&A on Friday, May 29th. This was the one right after the protest started, and it was about Facebook's response to Trump's looting and shooting post. So this Q&A made me really uncomfortable, and I wrote a little bit afterwards about how I felt like I was being lied to somehow. And it took me a while to sort out exactly what that feeling was. I think it was gaslighting. And it's hard to reconcile that with, you know, what I think was a sincere expression of compassion from Mark. But I just couldn't shake the feeling that there was this subtle bait and switch happening. I was being told that, we were all being told that, after long deliberation, leadership felt like Trump's posts didn't violate our policies. But I don't think that's what concerned folks like myself were thinking at all. And I don't want to purport to speak for everyone, but definitely folks I've talked to have the same sentiment. We weren't asking, does this thing follow our policy? We weren't asking whether it was consistent with our policy not to take action. We were asking, why do our policies allow for this thing? Why don't our policies require that we do take some kind of action? But Mark framed his whole response around following policy rather than fixing policy. The majority of time he spends talking about Trump's post, he spends talking about being consistent with our policies. In the Friday Q&A, he spends two-thirds of the time on Trump's post about that consistency. In the Tuesday follow-up Q&A, he spends an even greater proportion of time on the subject of consistency. And watching this, it just felt like someone was sort of, you know, slowly swapping out the rug from under my feet. Like they were swapping, you know, concerns about morals or justice or norms with this concern about consistency and logic, as though it were obviously the case that consistency is what mattered most. Now these two things, this slight misdirection on the one hand, and this laser focus on consistency on the other hand, was really, really unsettling to me. And in part, it's because we're talking about Donald Trump. And there's a bit of irony in that, because this is a thing that Trump does all the time. To take a recent example, when journalists asked Trump about risk to the election in November because of COVID-19, he tends to respond, yeah, I'm very worried about all the voter fraud that's going to happen because of mail-in ballots. Now, that's obviously not what people are asking about. But of course, mail-in voter fraud is actually super consistent with Trump's main concerns. He's worried about re-election, not about voting rights. So for Trump, this is a very logical turn. In fact, it's an opportunity to sort of redirect the conversation towards his priorities, never mind whether mail-in voting fraud is actually a real problem. And I think there's an analogy here with Mark's Q&A. Mark hones in on our consistency with our policy around inciting violence. Never mind that the question wasn't about policy consistency, but whether the policy was good. And never mind that the concern was about this violent and racist dog whistle. I don't think most folks who were concerned were specifically worried about vigilante rabble-rousing. Now, unlike Trump, Mark makes his primary concern super clear and explicit. And also, unlike Trump, it's not a gross abuse of power. Mark is guided by this ideology of free expression. But I think that is still a cause for concern, because this consistency around ideology is still subsuming all of these other concerns. And I think we saw this in both Q&As. As concerns get raised, they sort of get rerouted into this question of consistency. All these questions become questions about free expression. Much like how for Trump, questions about election integrity or COVID-19 become questions about how do we re-elect Trump. When I think about ideological consistency, especially in the era of Trump, I always think back to some reading I did in high school. Excerpts from a book called The Origins of Totalitarianism by German-American political philosopher Hannah Arendt. It's one of the seminal works about the rise of totalitarian regimes. I went back and read the whole book as part of research for this post, and I'd like to read a quick passage for you. Ideological thinking orders facts into an absolutely logical procedure, which starts from an axiomatically accepted premise, deducing everything else from it. That is, it proceeds with a consistency that exists nowhere in the realm of reality. The coercion of logic, the prohibition of contradictions, became productive, so that a whole line of thought could be initiated and forced upon the mind by drawing conclusions in the manner of mere argumentation. This argumentative process could be interrupted neither by a new idea, which would have been another premise with a different set of consequences, nor by a new experience. Ideologies always assume that one idea is sufficient to explain everything in the development from the premise, and that no experience can teach anything, because everything is comprehended in this consistent process of logical deduction. Arendt describes this focus on consistency as, quote, exchanging the freedom inherent in man's capacity to think for the straitjacket of logic, with which man can force himself almost as violently as he is forced by some outside power. Now, in these passages, Arendt is discussing totalitarian systems of rule. These systems, she says, are based on some guiding ideology, like, for example, racism applied through the force of Darwinism. And in particular, they're so fixated on their ideology that consistency with it becomes the primary driver, or only driver, of all their conclusions. Now, Facebook is not a totalitarian system of rule. That is not where I'm going with this. But that doesn't mean there's nothing to learn here. Arendt talks about how the safety of logic and consistency pushes out experience. In particular, it forces out new thought based on new premises, because everything is totally determined by the original premise. For Trump, everything is about him getting reelected. Anything else is in the way of that. Much as I think Facebook is getting trapped by our ideology of free expression, and the easy temptation of just trying to stay consistent with that ideology. This means we can't be responsive to what Arendt would call new beginnings, or new premises, anything fundamental that changes in the world around us. And I think it also causes us to lose sight of other important premises, like, for example, how free expression is supposed to serve human needs, supposed to serve people. Okay, so we have this commitment to ideological consistency. And I think the next question to ask is, who does this consistency serve? Because I don't think it's people. And for that question, I want to turn to Mark's Q&A from Tuesday, July 2nd. In particular, to the first question, the one from Brandon, who works in facilities in Austin. I want to thank Brandon for this question. I think it's very powerful and it's very raw. He tears up telling us how he's seen Trump's post cause so much harm and so much pain. And his question is just, what can we do to change that? Because it's just not working. And Mark's response does not really seem to get the issue. She spends most of his answer talking about process. He talks about enumerating prohibited harms. He talks about maintaining rigorous frameworks for making our calls. He talks about the distinction we make between violence and irreparable harm versus something that's very difficult to stomach. But none of these addresses the heart of Brandon's question, which is, people are hurting. What are we going to do? Do we care? And by ignoring that, the implication is we don't. And the other subtext of Brandon's question is that our policy itself hurts people. As part of his answer, Mark also makes this bizarre analogy between the speech act of posting the video of George Floyd's murder on one hand and Trump's looting and shooting post on the other. His point being that they both cause pain, and we shouldn't just banhammer everything that causes pain. Which is true, sure, but it really misses the point. Because those two kinds of pain are different. There is a difference between the pain of witnessing oppression and the pain of having leaders advocate for it. And on top of that, Brandon is also saying that it hurts seeing institutions like Facebook tolerating these endorsements of oppression. Do we care? Doesn't seem like we do. So one of the goals that Mark mentions in his answer, besides free expression, is serving everyone. Well, we're clearly okay with enshrining in our policies that certain sources of pain that people feel are acceptable. Again, including pain that our policies themselves cause. So what does serving everyone mean? What notion of everyone are these policies for? I claim that we're serving some concept of the state. And to be clear, I don't mean that we're in the pockets of governments, so let me try to explain. If you asked me 9 years ago what would be top of mind for Facebook in 2020, I would not have said civic integrity, political misinformation, presidential abuses of power. Maybe Mark would have, but he didn't show it back in 2011. And that's reasonable. Mark has made a lot of good calls. Facebook chat was definitely one of them, definitely not just bad Gmail, but he's not an oracle, he's not infallible. Because things have clearly changed. Newsfeed was envisioned as a newspaper by our friends. Now it's just news. It's political polarization, it's world issues, it's memes. But our whole concept of personalization has just gotten way less personal. Instead of being personal on a social or human level, things went to being politically personalized. Now for me, the most salient signpost of this trend showed up at the beginning of 2019, which is coincidentally when I started tossing wrenches all up into my career. And this was our newly christened focus on private communication. To me, this was the culmination of a years-long freefall of failing to promote meaningful social interaction on our platform. Doubling down on private communication seemed like waving the white flag on public social engagement. I think because we unfortunately let all of that become too political. And so we started serving this impersonal political sense of everyone. Now, Arendt also has something to say about this distinction between the social person and the political person. And she expresses it in terms of absences. She says, "It has frequently been observed that terror can rule absolutely only over men who are isolated against each other. Isolated men are powerless by definition. Isolation is that impasse into which men are driven when the political sphere of their lives, where they act together in the pursuit of a common concern, is destroyed. What we call isolation in the political sphere is called loneliness in the sphere of social intercourse. Isolation and loneliness are not the same. I can be lonely, that is, in a situation in which I, as a person, feel myself deserted by all human companionship, without being isolated. While isolation concerns only the political realm of life, loneliness concerns human life as a whole." I think when we let the political sphere take precedence over the social sphere, in other words, when we focus on addressing political isolation, even at the expense of human loneliness, for example, when we concern ourselves more with speech than with sadness and pain, or when we embrace polarizing political content, which does amp up political engagement in spite of its psychological tolls, when we do all that, we're serving some notion of the state rather than the people. And to Arendt, that's what the state is. It's something that maintains mutual consent to boundaries and to power between people. But all that political glue is not the people themselves. But letting the political displace the social is a dangerous thing to do. And Arendt gives us one reason why. She says, totalitarian domination as a form of government is new in that it is not content with isolation and destroys private life as well. It bases itself on loneliness, on the experience of not belonging to the world at all, when men can no longer find the redeeming grace of companionship to save them from equivocality and doubt. So I think in her eyes, failure to address the communal needs of the social person instills self-doubt in people and sets us all up for deadly systems of oppression. And I have a second reason to add. Facebook has had a huge effect on people's social lives. But then we did this bait and switch. We substituted the political person for the social person. We started catering our policies to political speech rather than human pain. And maybe we didn't start this process, but we certainly yielded to it. And I think this sends the confusing message that our service confronts the pain of loneliness or cares about pain of a non-political sort, even though perhaps these days we actually facilitate a lot of that pain. I want to make one last quick note here. In Marx's announcement about our pivot to private communication, he says we're doing it because that's what users wanted. But meanwhile, our policy choices are based on our own ideologies around free expression. These are not the same drivers. So to me, the unifying force here really is that active push towards the political person and away from the social person. But only the social person is an individual who experiences joy and sorrow and outrage and pain. That's the person we need to serve, and we are failing. And what's worse, we have enshrined that failure in our policies. All right, if you followed along this far, thank you so much. I really appreciate everyone who's taking the time to listen to what I have to say. And I have one last request, which is to please humor me while I give a round of thanks to everyone who's made a difference to me at Facebook. If you don't have time for that and you just came for the content, feel free to skip to this timestamp right here, right, in Snorlax's belly. But otherwise, I'm going to get started. Showing gratitude is really important to me, generally. So I'm going to do. So where do we go from here? And I don't just mean me, I mean everyone who is listening, everyone who's not listening, everyone who cares about this stuff. Well, if you disagree with all of the stuff I've said, if you think Facebook is doing its job right, this video is not for you. You do what you gotta do. I don't have anything to say about that. But, well, I'm obviously choosing to leave Facebook. I'm going to try to use the privilege I have, and which my time at Facebook has certainly given me, to continue the journey of social good that Facebook started and left 1% finished. But we all have different constraints. Maybe you have a family to support. Maybe you have debts to pay. Maybe you need your work visa just to stay in this country. Do what you can. Use whatever privilege is available to you. Don't get trapped by the barren logic of process or of execution. The premises matter. It's not just about consistency with them. Ruthlessly prioritize. And that means not getting misdirected. So for example, Facebook's last-minute Juneteenth programming was pretty good. But learning is not a replacement for policy change. And most importantly, never stop feeling. Feelings are the source of beginnings. And beginnings are how you break away from the trap of consistency and come up with something better. Keep in touch. You can find me on Messenger. You can find me on all sorts of social media. And thank you for coming to my TED Talk.